good evening.
Good evening, good evening.
Got some surprises tonight. This is very nice. So, Jorge, it's lovely to see you.
Good to see you too, Liz.
Yeah. Are you back or just about to go?
No, I'm
not going anywhere. That's good. Roman, it's good to see you too. Let's do introductions around.
Wendy, Simon,
Roman,
Jorge,
yeah,
Marie,
Jeanine,
Jeffrey,
Steve,
Judy.
And Marie, I'm so glad you're well enough to come back. We've missed you. I worried about you. But here you are. Yay. Yay. Well, we're just launching into the last discussions of Katagiri Roshi in this book, which are all about karma. In fact, the chapter that we come to, he gave a little bit about creating the future, sort of preparing us, saying the study of karma requires us to examine human life in terms of past, present, and future. Well, that's pretty vague. We're always studying human life. It's the most interesting subject that we have to study. but he goes into the definition of karma, which means to act, to work, or to do. It's not a thing. You can't have karma. It's not a thing. You enact karma. You do it. So it includes, he points out, both mental and physical action. So our thoughts are acting. Our thoughts have powerful action often, more than we would prefer often. We're driven by our thoughts, and we are affected by our thoughts in so many different ways. And the less attentive we are to how our thinking operates, the more confused we can be, because then thinking is running our show, and it's very helpful to become familiar with the various different action being bodies that our thoughts constitutes. There's the child of us who continues into old age. Every one of us has a little child, sometimes a crying child. And every one of us has some very noble and strong and upright kind of person inside. And some of us, every one of us, has some sort of deep compassion person as we are. And we sort of work through all of those. We are the activity of all the different aspects of our being. We're not just one thing. We're all these different ways that we can enact our life. So becoming familiar with that is actually our practice. As we sit, all the different kinds of it come up. We become very familiar with it. He talks about early Buddhism and how it was described in the Abhidharma. which is the old Buddhist psychology that examines how you produce your life, including past, present, and future. In the Abhidharma, the karma is something like a continuous energy somewhere in human life. It's a little vague, he says, but maybe there's a little energy that comes up when a baby is born. A continuous stream of human energy that exists prior to our consciousness. And then in Mahayana Buddhism, there was a psychology called Vijñanavada, which he's already spoken about earlier on, of storehouse consciousness. The Alyavat Vijnana. And then he says it continues to develop Buddhist psychology in the Avatamsaka Sutra, which is a very big, fat, wonderful story that I encourage you to look into sometime. And that, he says, presents a very clear, definite structure that explains how the human world is going. he says it's very complicated, philosophy and psychology, but karma is understood not only as potential mental or physical power, but also as a kind of energy in the stream of existence called interdependent co-origination. Well, interdependent co-origination is the basis of Buddha's enlightenment. It's what he saw, the how connected our minds are, all the different aspects of our mind, and how one generates another, and then another generates that one. It goes round and around and around and around. And also that we are codependent entirely with everything else in our world. That we're codependent with the chair we sit in, and the floor that we stand on, and the food that we eat, and the air that we breathe. It's all of a piece of, you could say, of us, or we are a piece of it, of the whole. He says, the very deep Mahayana philosophy of interdependent co-origination explains that everything is produced by conditioned elements, which are always creating an energetic stream that's completely beyond thought, beyond control. Karma works within interdependent co-origination. So karma belongs not just to a particular being, but to the depth of existence in general, to cosmic existence. So it's not about you or me. It's not about each individual, more it's the whole of the whole operation of it, you could say. He says it's not vast, it's not something you completely understand. It can only be understood by more than your intellect, from a dispassionate, imperturbable perspective. If you see very deeply the structure of human existence, you can see the actual reality, how complicated it is. Karma is not fate or destiny, but it includes a dynamic energy to make your life productive. Everyone can feel this, so you can use karma even though you don't understand it. Well, I would say you are using karma, whether you understand it or not. We all are. We call it causes and conditions sometimes, that all the different causes that create every single moment of every moment is the karma of it. It's so complicated that we can't claim it. We can't claim it individually. We can we're getting very interested in our culture now, in looking at where we came from. We want to know our ancestry, and we're going into the DNA and picking it out, peeking into the DNA and seeing, oh, where did we come from? Who are we, after all? And then beginning to understand that how vast even that is, just tracking back all the different places that we came from through history, all the way back to those people in the trees who weren't even human beings yet. And even before that, the people in the ocean, the ones who were coming in the hot cracks in the depth of the trenches, volcanic, so hot that nothing can survive, but these little beings that were alive, are alive still. And out of all of that, us. So, it's very, very complicated and mysterious. He said there are three kinds of activity: physical deeds of the body, linguistic deeds of the mouth, and mental deeds of the mind. Body, speech, and mind. We often talk about that in Zen. We honor body, speech, and mind. We take vows about trying to keep clean in body, speech, and mind, in all the different ways that our living brings us. Deeds produce the stream of causation, so there is cause and effect. Karma is based on the laws of causation. Good cause produces good result, evil cause produces evil result, and neutral cause produces neutral result. The natural and common understanding of cause and effect is that if you do something good, you'll get a good result. Does that always happen? No. No. And if you do bad things, you're supposed to be punished by the heavens. But sometimes bad people can thrive. So it's not so simple. Cause will bring result in this life or the next life or in the life after the next life in Buddhism. In other words, life is going on, life after life after life. Not our life, but life. And it does appear in the studies that they are making that the things that happen to our grandparents, for instance, are somehow laid down in our own DNA and in our own experience, although it's not quite clear how that works, but they're beginning to find out. So what the Buddhists discovered thousands of years ago is just beginning to become verified in science, that what we do now, if it has a powerful effect on somebody, will affect that person's heirs and assigns, everybody who comes after. So that's kind of awesome. And we can feel it in our own lives. If we know our own back history, where we came from, we can feel the effect of it also, even though we can't quite put our finger on it. He says, the karma of what you did in the past is right here, right now. When you see that, maybe you don't feel good, but keep your mouth shut and just feel it. Don't avoid it. Don't pretend it didn't happen. Just look at it. You have to accept the result of it in order to stay sane, really. As long as you can face your own foolishness an incapacity without lying to yourself, the stronger you will be and the more honest. So first he says, totally accept your life and what you did in the past. Even if you did bad, stupid things in the past, and we all did bad, stupid things in the past. I know we did. Then based on the past, make a choice about what to do in the present. And this we can do. And by your decision, you can create a new life in the future. That's the real meaning of freedom. Freedom is the vastness of existence where you can accept your past and create your new life moving toward the future. So that's why beginning again is so important. We come to grief over and over, but we can always start over. We always do start over. Sometimes it's really, really hard, and we think, oh, it's too hard, I'm not going to do that. But something in us keeps us going. Whatever you did, it's true. So accept responsibility for your life. Then with your free will, make a choice. We make these choices continually. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. And that's why when we take the precepts are not just all the things of killing, stealing, lying, etc. But the three pure precepts are embracing and sustaining right conduct, embracing and sustaining every good, embracing and sustaining all beings. So before we even begin to think about all the ways that we really enact things, we set our mind in a certain way, in the way of compassion and care. Vowing is important. It's very, very helpful when life gets so gnarly to have a vow inside you. He says, if you're interested in Zen Buddhism, you're free to decide what to do. You can go to a Zen center for practice and study, and if you don't like that place, that's okay, go someplace else. That's a choice you make with your own free will. But if you choose to stay and practice at a Zen center, there are limitations, rules, and regulations. So with your freedom, you can make a choice, but after making the choice, you should throw away your freedom and practice according to the rules and regulations. Then you can create your destiny, your new life that you're really interested in, because your deeds are causes and your future life is the result. So just accept it. Just accept your life. Maybe you have questions. He goes on, the next chapter is individual and not individual karma. So there are many chapters on this subject. So manifest and unmanifested karma, karma and causation. The one on causation is probably the longest one. So are there questions, comments?
I guess there, anytime I start thinking or listening to talks about karma, it starts to feel like very, very like right and wrong, kind of dualistic. And I guess guess like all of my preconceived notions come like flooding in.
Yes.
To like the conversation.
Yes. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned it. I was told a long time ago that karma translates as work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the work that's in front of you.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of like held on to that. You know, whenever my notions start to flood in, the idea of what really what right and wrong is, what
yes.
I'm pointing at, what
yes.
what it becomes for me is this debate over right and wrong, and where I fall, you know, in that
well,
arena.
If you, yes, yes. Well, it gets very uncomfortable if you start talking. If we start talking about what's right and what's wrong, because it's all relative, and you can't point to it in the same way. There's something in between, which is what our life is. Our life lies in a between space, and sometimes we veer on one side and we veer on another side, and I say in a kind of drunken stagger, we don't quite know where we are, but we keep moving and being moved back to the center and then losing our balance and then coming back again over and over again. It's a kind of balancing act that keeps us imperfect beings because we can never do it exactly right. And sometimes we make mistakes. But in the end, those things don't matter. That's what he's saying. That we have to see what we are. But that is not going to... We can do what we like in the moment. We don't have to be affected by what we consider to be a wrong kind of past or good kind of past either. We don't need to judge ourselves that way. We can't judge ourselves. We just have to do our very, very best. And when we make a mistake, we have to say, I'm sorry. When we have regrets, we have regrets. And when we have joyous moments, we share them with everyone. But it's important to take responsibility for what we are. I think that's the point of karma, is what we are, and as much as we can understand where we came from, you know, to honor where we came from. Those folks were tough. Just imagine how tough they were, that they survived all the stuff that happened up to now and made it possible for us to be here. As we're making it possible, God willing, for the next generation. Though we never know. We never know. That too is awesome.
I'm gonna have some more thoughts here.
Uh-huh.
Interdependent co-origination that you touched on. I like to take that to like the consciousness, even like the evolution of a thought, you know, as it comes kind of creeping from the magma in my mind, and the same kind of thought comes from, you know, another place, and they kind of meet, you know, as they evolve into, you know, an idea, and
yeah.
I mean, it's really abstract in the way I, you know, I'm kind of picturing it now. But we we evolve as a race, you know, globally, you know, know, even in a technological sense, we, you know, something's invented over here and it pops up over here, you know, so I think that there is a deeper connection, whether it, you know, moves generationally or laterally across, you know, distances, you know, and you touched
right.
on that.
You're right. In my own life, that was an experience. My husband was an inventor. He worked long and hard on this invention, how to make fabric without doing this with the thread. He invented a way to throw the thread on a spool all the way through the warp and then throw it back again, back and forth, as it changed back and forth. And he worked very hard on that, and he got a patent. He was this close to getting a patent. He had a company willing to work with him back in Boston, and we're going to make it. And it turned out somebody in Czechoslovakia at the same time had the same thought and got the patent before he did.
Wow.
And you think, oh, but all those causes, and exactly, they all come together, the ideas are all there. And he happened to be in a factory and saw how silly it was to make things that way. He thought there must be a better way. And somebody else had the same thought. Yeah, it's very cool. Very, very cool.
Thank you, Archie.
Oh, thank you, Roman. So we'll talk about causes and conditions, our individual and non-individual karma. And it's very short, so we'll do the next chapter too. I think I can do two chapters at a time through the next couple of days. So individual character is just particularity, and non-individual is in body, speech, and mind. He says human beings have two kinds. If you do something in any of the body, speech, and mind categories, then you create your own life, but also the life of your family and community. So each of us has a powerful effect on where we are and how we are where we are. So our neighborhoods are affected by our presence. Our family is very much affected by us and what we do, say, how we work and play and affect everybody. Even without speaking, we can have an effect on people as we walk down the sidewalk. So it puts us not in a way that we have to behave ourselves, but to be very aware of what's happening. Because we too are being powerfully affected by everything and everyone that we meet and everything that is happening to us. And so it's this mutual mixing and changing and constantly giving us a new challenge, which we need. I do believe that as human beings we need challenges and that we can welcome them, sometimes hard as they are, that they have meaning for us. So that's probably enough, unless there are more questions, comments. almost 8. Time to sit. Announcements?
3 minutes. Yes. So you're doing an ordination this coming Sunday?
Friday.
It's Friday.
Friday. Friday afternoon.
Jikoji.
Yes.
And you don't know a time exactly.
I do believe it's after lunch. Sesshin is going on at Jikoji right now, and it will be over on Friday morning. Usually there's a couple of sits before breakfast, and then I think there's going to be a talk about the ordination, which I will give sometime in the morning. And then in the afternoon after lunch, Balin will take the precepts and accept his robe. He sewed a whole robe all by himself. Wasn't easy, but he did it. So everyone's invited. It's going to be, he was a student of Koban as far back as I was. So he's just part of the family. And he's finally getting a Dharma name and a little recognition. Very cool.
So what's the best way to participate? Is it to come after lunch or the whole day, or do you have any idea?
I would say come after lunch. Yeah. Because they provide for the lunch, but unless you let them know you're coming,
right,
it's just the logistics of it. It's a nice ride up there. Yeah. Worth it just for the ride.
And I could add that we are participating with Ruby Balin, a check for $300 to cover his bowl and whatever.
I hope he gets a set of bowls, but we let him have the choice of what to get for his priestly life. Mm-hmm. We'll see what he chooses.
And why do you hope that you would get bowls?
Because it's traditional.
It's
yes. Usually the bowls are presented, but he's been sitting Sesshin for so long, I think he has bowls, so he may want new ones, but I wanted to give him the choice. Yeah. Let's do our sit.